随着德尔塔变体在中国扩散，中国再一次把病毒的源头跟美国军方联系起来，毫无根据地提出新冠病毒可能来自德特里克堡实验室。中国政府控制的社交媒体上甚至放出古怪和耸人听闻的谣言，说前美国国务卿蓬佩奥承认新冠是美国的生物武器。不管是否有人相信这些阴谋论，弄清事实至关重要。那德特里克堡实验室到底从事什么研究？新冠病毒是不是符合作为生物武器的条件？以及国际社会要如何来监督履行生物武器公约？今天我们非常荣幸地邀请到奥巴马政府负责和化学和生物预防项目的国防部助理部长安德鲁·韦伯先生来回应和解答这些问题。韦伯先生现在是美国智库战略风险理事会的高级研究员。 Honorable Assistant Secretary Weber, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
A conspiracy theory linking the origin of the coronavirus to the U.S. Army lab for Dietrich has regained traction in China since WHO proposed a second phase probe into the origin of COVID-19 in July.Before China started the accusation in March, most people hadn't heard about the lab. Could you please tell us what is 4Dietrich Lab? What research does it do?
Well, this is a baseless conspiracy theory, as you described it. 4Dietrich is home to the United States Department of Defense biodefense facilities. It's a laboratory.Where we develop vaccines and therapeutics and diagnostics against dangerous potential biological weapons.
And as the outbreak of the Delta variant worsens in China, Beijing has doubled down on the U.S. lab leak conspiracy, calling for a WHO investigation into the 4Dietrich lab.One of China's conspiracy theories suggests a temporary shutdown of 4Dietrich in July 2019 over security protocol breaches was a precursor for the wider COVID-19 outbreak. Was COVID-19 leaked from 4Dietrich? And what was the cause for the suspension of the research at the lab?
Yeah, well, first, this is a spurious accusation. Nobody, including the WHO, which has rejected this request,believes that there's any evidence of this terrible coronavirus pandemic starting in Maryland in the United States. There's just not a shred of evidence to support this theory. We all know where it started, and we're trying to learn more about how it started in China. So there's just no basis to these accusations.
So what was the reason that the research was temporarily suspended at the 4Dietrich?
Oh, there were some issues that were uncovered during an inspection by our Centers for Disease Control that required a stand down of several months while they dealt with some flooding issues, I believe, in the waste treatment system.
Recently, Chinese state-controlled social media have circulated a document that claims to contain former U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo's internal remarks to West Point cadets in June 2020. It claims that Mr. Pompeo admitted that COVID-19 was a U.S. biological weapon. Mr. Pompeo called the document fake, according to the Washington Times. What's your response to China's outlandish propaganda efforts?
Well, why would he say that? That's just ridiculous, and it's inconsistent with everything else he said on this topic, not all of which I agree with. I don't believe it was developed as a biological weapon by the government of China one bit, although he has said that from time to time.
So whether or not someone believes the conspiracy, it's important to know if COVID-19 can be a good biological weapon. So what are the criteria of desirable biological weapons? Can we look at each criterion and whether COVID-19 is a desirable biological weapon? So first, easy to access. Is COVID virus easy to access, to get?
Oh, yes. It's available wherever the outbreak is occurring, in patient samples. And also, there's a lot of information related to the genetic sequence of the virus and all of its variants that's publicly available.
Mm-hmm. So the second criteria is easy to manufacture. So is COVID-19 easy to grow?
It's not easy to grow, but there have been publications that describe how to go about growing it. And so it's not terribly difficult, and you would not have to grow a significant quantity because it spreads so effectively from human to human.
So, and the third, stable in atmosphere. Is COVID-19 stable indoor and outdoors?
Well, certainly we know that it's stable in aerosol form indoors, less so outdoors. But environmental hardiness is one of the aspects that a country illegally developing biological weapons in contravention of the Biological Weapons Convention would look for.
And the next is it's easy transferable from person to person. So does COVID-19 meet this characteristics?
Well, some people think that the ideal biological weapon would not be easy to spread from person to person because it has, if it does, it has the potential to blow back on the population that released it in the first place. But this virus is, we have seen, very, very transmissible, and it spreads easily from person to person.
And also a high percentage of infected people become ill. So we know COVID-19 infected people, but for up to 40% of the infected people are asymptomatic, and individuals between 18 and 24, which make up a large portion of the military personnel, may only be mildly affected.
Right. So this virus has lethality of about 1% of the people who are infected killed by it. So that's not very high for a biological weapon if the intent of that weapon is to kill a lot of people. But there are probably ways that it could be altered to make it more lethal.
Mm-hmm. And also users of the weapon can be protected. So when COVID-19 first broke out, could U.S. protect ourselves?
No, we had no vaccine available against this virus. But thank goodness now, with our incredible scientific capabilities, we've been able to develop three vaccines that are currently in use.
Mm-hmm. And also the threat of the use can cause panic among populations. So COVID-19 has that characteristics, doesn't it?
I think so. It doesn't have quite the scary aspect of a disease like Ebola or smallpox or anthrax, but we've all seen the terrible, terrible damage that it can inflict on a population.
And also another characteristic is of biological weapon is very contagious. Once you release, it's hard to take it back. So what do you think COVID-19?
It's highly contagious. It's amazing how quickly it spread from China all around the world. And it continues to spread even in countries that have launched vaccine programs.
Mm-hmm. So in conclusion, do you think COVID-19 is a good weapon? Or is it a terrorism act?
I do think it has potential in the future to be used by terrorists or even countries that develop biological weapons like North Korea as a biological weapon. Of course, this would be illegal, and the international community needs to do everything in its power to prevent the development of this virus into a biological weapon.
Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian asked what secrets are hidden in the suspicious shrouded Fort Detrick and over 200 U.S. labs all over the world. So are these labs hiding anything?
No. They've been very transparent, and they're doing legitimate medical research on mostly to develop vaccines and therapeutics to prevent dangerous viruses ranging from malaria to Rift Valley fever to some of the more dangerous viruses, which we know some countries like the Soviet Union have developed as biological weapons.
Well, China, of course, speculated that the U.S. is developing biological weapons. So is the United States developing any biological weapons?
Absolutely not. President Nixon ended the United States biological weapons program in 1969, and then we led the negotiation of the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention, which prohibits the development and stockpiling of biological weapons altogether. And we have not had any biological weapons efforts since 1969.
So many countries, including the United States, the former Soviet Union, United Kingdom, Japan, and Canada, used to have biological weapons programs and have shut down. But there are other countries such as China, North Korea, and Iran are suspected of continue to developing biological weapons. So as you mentioned, the Biological Weapon Convention signed by 183 countries in 1973, but it's been violated ever since, time to time. So how can international community to address this compliance concerns?
Well, those violations, particularly by the Soviet Union, were exposed. So we need to continue to shine sunlight on potential covert illegal biological weapons programs so we can get them shut down.
How are we can actually do that?
Well, it's much harder to keep secrets in the world of 2021 than it was 40 or 50 years ago. So I think we just need to continue to press for transparency, to use methods to strengthen the Biological Weapons Convention. And I'm also interested in a new proposal from the president of Kazakhstan to create a new international biosafety agency to monitor these laboratories that work on dangerous pathogens.
So Mr. Biden ordered the U.S. intelligence to find out where the origins of COVID-19. So you think the 90 days will be enough? What should we do after 90 days?
Well, this is a very important study, and we look forward to the results in a few weeks. But I don't expect it will be the end of this process. Indeed, I expect that the study will also identify the gaps in our knowledge that need to be closed, especially particular types of information that the government of China has refused to share with either the World Health Organization or other countries in the international community.
The deadline for the report is Tuesday, August 24th. Do you think the report will be released to the public soon?
Definitely, it will be released to the public. There may be a further classified version that's not released, but part of this exercise will be to declassify the conclusions of this very important investigation. That's when we'll learn what the United States intelligence community believes was the origin of this terrible pandemic.
And then the public will hopefully to know the report in a few weeks.
Yes, I'm sure there will be briefings for the public on the key findings of that report.
Mm-hmm. Are you confident? Do we have a smoking gun?
No, I don't think there's a smoking gun. I think they'll lay out the case for all three of the major hypotheses. One, that it originated from a laboratory in Wuhan. The other is that a laboratory worker on an expedition in southern China taking samples in bat caves became infected directly from a bat. And then the third possibility, that it somehow spilled over from humans, from animals to wildlife to humans, and we didn't detect it until it was rampant in Wuhan.
Thank you so much, Honorable Assistant Secretary Weber. Do you have anything to add?
Well, thank you very much. This is a very important topic, and I think it's important that we expose these baseless conspiracy theories that are being spread by the governments of China and the government of Russia about United States activities, because there's no shred of truth to any of them.
Honorable Assistant Secretary Weber, thank you so much for your time and shedding light on these important issues.
Thank you very much.
非常感谢前美国国防部负责和化学和生物预防项目的助理部长安德鲁·韦伯先生的分析和解答。来宾发表的都是个人意见，并不一定代表美国之音。中国新冠疫情继续扩散，江苏扬州和河南郑州疫情最为严重。湖北武汉在病例清零一年后第一次出现了本土感染。中国政府采取了更加严格的防控措施，对受到疫情影响的各个省份和城市进行封锁、全民核酸检测，并且对各地几十名官员进行问责和处罚。那 Delta 变体对防疫带来哪些新的困难？用行政权力和行政措施防疫有哪些悲剧性的潜在威胁？要如何调整不惜一切代价的防控思维？今天我们邀请香港大学李嘉诚医学院的金东彦教授来分析和点评。金教授，非常感谢您参加今天的访谈。
谢谢主持人。
一年多来，中国一直采取非常严格的这个防疫战略，成功的控制了一些小范围的疫情。可是这一次 Delta 变体已经扩散到了20多个省份。那金教授，这一次的疫情有什么特点？给防疫带来哪些新的困难呢？
那这一次的疫情呢，它比跟过去相比，它就是那个爆发的点更多，而且呢，它就是因为他发现的比较晚，所以他实际上呢，在发现之前已经在暗地里面呢有一定的传染了。但是呢，他是这一方面这个特点可以说是因为是 Delta 变种，这个 Delta 变种它的传播力是比较强的，它比过去去更强，而且它的病毒载量更高，所以呢，它呢就是有可能造成更多的，有机会造成更多的超级传播，但是它的基本的传播特点是没有变的。就是说呢，中国这一波的疫情，其实呢，它的那些个热点，就是传播的热点，跟这个全世界，跟中国过去，跟全世界发现已经发现的这些个热点是没有不同的。例如说这个扬州，它叫那个棋牌室，那就是跟这些外面这些卡拉 OK 啊这些娱乐场所是因为这个，武汉它是因为这个工地。这工地，我们新加坡有工地，香港有工地，也有这种传播热点爆发啊。你像那个张家界，它是这个一个演出，那也是很多这种啊。像广州，它是那个茶楼啊。像这个南京，它是一个机场，所以它像郑州是医院，这些呢基本上都是呢一些容易出事的一些个热点。这也只能说就是中国在前一段已经完全放开了，它基本上回到了疫情前的防控措施了，所以呢这些的热点它都不防控，所以呢一旦是传入了这个病毒呢，它就会像这个野火一样的，野火烧不尽，春风吹又生，一下它就烧起来了。
那金教授，他现在用这个回到原来这个严防死守的这样的一个战略，您觉得这样对这个病毒的变异有没有作用？
他这个还应该说他这个用这个严防死守这个办法呢，在中国历次这个防疫里面还是奏效的，相信他在这一次这个防疫里面呢也能奏效 那当然他们在这么一个过程中呢，有了一些小小的进步，有一些小的调整啊，例如这个封锁的时间啊，封锁的范围啊，但是总的来说它没有什么变化，而且它的手段也不够多啊，这一点呢就是说是是可以说是一个遗憾啊，它还是在一定程度上造成了这个扰民和这些个过当防疫，就是说它防疫过度，采取了很多过当的措施，比如呢就是说用给这个南京市民，给这个扬州市民呢做了很多次的这个全民检测啊，有人说是六次，有人说是八次多少次，那这些实际上是不是有十分之必要的，如果说他能够呢做到更精准更科学的这个防控呢，其实呢他把那个重要的资源用在一些其他的方面，可能效果呢会更好。
那您刚才提到这个措施不够多，要用在更精准的方面，您能给我们举个例子应该怎么样来调整？
其中呢就是很重要，就是说呢这个新冠病毒的传播最重要就是要防超级传播，超级传播就是说一传多，甚至一传几十，一传五十，一传一百，这种情况你只要把这一头抓住了，那它就是呢能解决很大的问题。因为呢在整个新冠的受感染者里头呢，并不是每个人都很能传的啊。他说这个传播系数一传五，一传六，一传八，这个其实是没有意义的，它只有相当于呢这个 10% 到15% 的人特别能传，其他 85% 的人呢他的传播是很有限的。所以我们要盯紧了这 15% 的人，一个呢就是说我们的雷达系统要足够灵敏，要追踪这些人，尽早发现超级传播。第二个呢，我们是要做这个场所防控，前面我就讲过了，这个场所的防控是最最重要的，就是说呢它往往是有 10% 的场所，基本上呢它就可以包括了 80-90% 的感染者啊。问题呢就是中国在这个场所的管控方面呢，它只是两级，要不然就是封，要不然就是全放，它并不能做到的一个更理想的状态，就是说呢它能够在兼顾这些个场所的这些从业人员的生计的前提之下，又符合这个防疫的要求，包括餐馆，包括这个这些个棋牌室，其实它是能够做到呢既能够照顾防疫的要求，也给人家一条生计，这样子是最理想，但是它暂时现在还做不到，它还是呢一放就乱，就是全放，要不然呢就是全关，全关呢就是一关就是。
那现在中国采取全民核酸检测的这样一个方法，那对南京呢已经900万人做了4轮的检测，扬州是已经开始做第6轮的检测，您可能知道的更加这个精准一些啊，郑州也完成了3次。那根据统计，在2020年5月，武汉的1100万人完成1轮的全员检测就要耗费20亿元人民币。那您觉得在目前的这个状况下，疫情的这个范围比较小，而且我们又有了疫苗，中国这样做的代价是不是太大，值不值得？
当然是不值得的，我是历来都反对这个动辄搞这个全民检测的，他们把这个过分了，把它当作是他社会主义制度的优越性了，他这个怎么好了，但是实际上呢他这个基本上是浪费资财啊，他有这些个资财呢其实可以去做到更好。第一个，他把这个密切追踪者追得更好，比如说广州这个阿婆，他到现在都没有找出他的源头，如果你把那个抗体检测得好一点，把他的密切接触者都测好了抗体，应该是能够找出来这个阿婆到底是怎么样传染的，把这个传播史传播链给搞清楚，这样子呢对他吸取教训啊，做将来那个做更好的防控是有利的啊。又比如说呢，他如果能把这个抗原检测啊的灵敏度特异性都搞得很好的话呢，他可以做快筛，他做这个快筛呢就是说呢他可以呢像运一下，大家在家里面就验，这样子呢验了他有问题的人才去做核酸，这样呢也是能做得更好。再加上呢就是说他应该做这个更多的这个恒常的检测，就是这种 regular 的这个 checkup。然后呢他这种恒常的检测呢就是说他是把这个社区的雷达布得更灵敏，这样子呢是事半功倍，而不是呢是那个动辄全民检测核酸检测呢，这样子呢是事倍功半。 这个为啥说我说要把这个平常多做一点呢？你平常做多一点呢，就是说你把有这个这个发热门诊的这些人，还有一些平常就是例行检测里面的一些高危的人群，包括这个机场工作人员，包括这些个等等，出租司机、出租汽车司机等等，这些会跟很多人接触的人，你如果经常对他们检测呢，就是说有很小很小的爆发，可能他们这些呢就像社区的雷达跟岗哨一样，他呢就能够发现，然后呢你马上做好这个追踪，就把这个疫情呢就是能够很早的切断，这样子防患于未然。现在的情况呢，他是每次检测到的时候，其实已经呢传播了一段时间了。哎，广州是这样，郑州是这样，南京是这样，那个扬州也是这样。现在我们呢，只能够是说呢，我们是希望这个上天还是眷顾啊，这个中国这样子呢，使到它没有多次的这个超级传播。如果它有连续多次的超级传播呢，它就防不住的。
那这次这个南京禄口国际机场疫情爆发后，南京市副市长、南京市江宁区原区委的副书记，还有南京市卫健委的党委书记等15名党员干部都受到了这个处分和追责。那扬州也是一样，很多干部也是受到了这个问责，分别受到记过、警告，还有降级处分等等。那您怎么看，在防疫的过程当中用这些行政手段，会不会是一把双刃剑呢？
是啊，我完全同意。因为呢，就是说呢，如果他这些官员确实有过失，你可以给他一点教训。但是如果你搞得用这个严刑峻法，动辄都把人撤职的话呢，这样子的话呢，其他的地方的官员是一个警示，而且呢，他也是会心生这个恐慌。然后呢，他真是有疫情的时候呢，他可能就想方设法去隐瞒。这样的情况呢，就是说会起一个反作用的。我经常讲那个南京，它那个禄口机场，其实它有做得好的地方，它能够在这个例行检测里面检测到有阳性，这点是证明它的系统是有 work 的，是有发挥作用的。但是呢，它等到它检出的时候已经晚了，这样子呢，就是说它是可以再改进。但是呢，它的整个系统还是有起作用，并不是，所以说呢，是有功有过，而不是说他们完全都是一无是处。
那现在中国的疫苗已经施打了17亿次了，现在呢正在考虑进口德国的这个 BioNTech 的复必泰疫苗作为加强针。目前中国对这个疫苗对德尔塔变体的保护率有没有这方面的研究数据？
我相信他们可能是有一定的研究数据吧，但是呢，就是说所有的疫苗对于这个 Delta 它都有下降，那中国的下降多少，这一点呢大家一直都不知道。而且中国的疫苗它还有面临其他一些问题，应该说总体来说，我一直的观点都是说它是有效的，但是它是不完美的，它有很多的问题，比如它的那个保护的效能，可能呢6个月以后就没有保护了，可能有一部分人没有保护，可能呢它总体来说它的那个中和抗体的低度比较低，所以呢它这个打这个第三针是应该是迫在眉睫，应该呢尽快就是打第三针，特别是要对这个免疫差的这个人群，还有这个高危的人群，像医生这些赶紧打第三针。如果配打这个复必泰和康希诺这些呢是更好，他们应该呢尽快批准复必泰疫苗，这是唯一他们应该做的正确的事情。
非常感谢香港大学李嘉诚医学院的金东彦教授为我们做的分析和点评。来宾发表的都是个人意见，并不一定代表美国之音。感谢您收看《时事大家谈》，我是叶凡，下次节目再会。